Ladies and gentlemen, we are here. We have made it. This might be the big one. Bonk.
Donk.
That's me, Donk. My name's Dan Reichert. I'm one of the hosts here. I'm sitting across from Bianca Reichert, my wife and fellow host. Hello, honey. How are you doing?
I'm well. I have a pillow on my lap, and I have a cup of tea on top of that pillow.
You do?
And I'm sitting directly across from you.
It's a hot time. It's summer in the city right now. It's a sweaty, sticky day out there.
It's actually really nice, but I almost didn't want to tell you how nice it was because I know you kind of wanted to have a day in Mario making, so.
I have been spending a lot of time
Mario making.
I didn't want you to feel
bad about it, but it's a really nice day out.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, now that you told me, I got to get out there. Well, anyway, we are here inside on this hot, sticky, unfathomably uncomfortable to be outside day to talk about anime.
Yes, anime.
Now,
you know, Dan, I feel like you and I, we're kind of resistant to anime. If you told us 2 years ago that we would have watched My Hero Academia, Dragon Ball, Case Closed.
Dipped our toes into a couple of, Case Closed and Assassination Classroom. And,
yeah, I would have been confused because why are we watching so much anime? But then if I learned about the podcast, I probably would have been like, all right, that makes sense.
That does make more sense, but I am actually, this is one of the times I'm very glad to have this podcast with you. I love doing it each and every week, but occasionally we find these big things, like Neon Genesis
Evangelion.
I knew I was going to, first time out of the gate, I was like, okay, I'm going to mispronounce it. I'm going to immediately mispronounce it. Is it Eva? Is it Ava? Is it Evangelion?
Jelly monsters like the Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters,
No, Neon Genesis Evangelion is a show that ever since...
It's a show about nothing.
Right, yes.
Can you imagine?
ever since we started doing this, or ever since the anime seal was broken, I think, with me, ever since I showed that I was possibly capable of enjoying an anime, I have seen people say things both for and against the watching of Evangelion.
Right.
I didn't know what it was about. Okay, here's what I knew about Evangelion before now. It was about robots. It was an anime, and people have extremely strong opinions about it.
Right.
And it deals with, like, deep, serious themes and all that stuff. But that's the end of my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I realized how big of a deal it was until Netflix announced months and months and months ago that they were bringing this to Netflix. I didn't know it was hard to find. And I basically got a sense of, like, okay, it seems like people treat this like it's, like, this prestige, like, for adults anime.
Mm-hmm.
And I do kind of feel like we started with Dragon Ball, and Dragon Ball feels like a children's show.
It's a children's
show. That's not a slight on it, but, like, you know, you could watch that as a kid. Tons of kids watched it and loved it. And then My Hero, I think there's nothing that would stop a kid from liking it and enjoying it, but I do think that My Hero's got a little more going on for, like, kids and adults, would you say?
I would say that, for sure. It's, like, actually funny at times. I think there are certain elements of that show that only adults would be able to fully appreciate.
Yeah.
I think, actually, if I was a younger kid, I might think, like, oh, that's so cheesy. But, like, as an adult, I'm like, yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, it deals with, like, some deeper themes.
Yeah.
Whereas I think everything I heard about Evangelion is true because I can't really imagine watching this as a kid and really, like, I would probably thought the robots were cool and the explosions were cool, but this is dealing with, like, okay, we watched the first 8 episodes of 26. My understanding is I'm sure it is going to get much deeper in the weeds with a lot of this stuff. But even just from out of the gate when we started watching this show, I think it was very clear that this was a different type of anime.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of, like, that context. And as we've established already, Dan and I are not longtime anime fans. But I would think that in the mid-90s when this came out, that I assume a lot of people, especially in the West, still have the perception of anime being like a cartoon. If it's a cartoon, it's for kids.
Right, right.
Which, like, when I was a kid, my oldest brother, Tommy, who was just on Panning Stream, was really into anime for a little while, and he would show us all these, like, really graphic, you know, brutally, like, super gory nudity, like, these wild animes. And I knew for a while that it wasn't for kids, but I wonder if, like, people were as receptive to it in the 90s because from what I read, it, like, had a pretty slow start. It wasn't particularly popular in the beginning, at least in Japan. I don't know about how it was received in the U.S. when it was first coming out. But it's really from the jump, you can tell, even though it focuses on a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
There are elements of it that I feel like only really adults would be able to appreciate. I mean, because it's not spelling stuff out for you.
Yeah. So that's the thing is I was wondering going in, because I heard that this dealt with like very serious themes and like kind of obvious themes. And I have historically been bad at picking up on mm-hmm. subtext and themes and things like that, historically. So I was like, man, am I just going to watch this and I'm just going to see robots and explosions and I'm not going to see anything deeper than that? And so like I have been like watching for it. And like I think some things are extremely clear with mm-hmm. this show. I think it is dealing with trauma. I think it is dealing with, like, Shinji Akami is the main character here. He is one of those 14-year-old children that you refer to. And even before a lot of more serious events happen, he definitely seems like a reserved kid mm-hmm. who doesn't seem great at dealing with people. He seems very shy. But as these events go on, tied to the Eva, it's clear that I think there is some, like, major underlying trauma with this kid.
Right.
And the show, I'm curious to see where that all goes. Mm-hmm. I've heard the creator, you know, put a lot of his own experience with depression and everything into the writing of this show, and I think it shows.
Right.
But I guess before we start running things down here, people were wondering if I was going to hate it or if I was going to love it. Let's start with you. I think I know how you're going to answer this, mm-hmm. but what are your thoughts?
I really like it so far. I'm yeah. super into it. Yeah, it's I really love shows that are really dark but are kind of framed in this fun, like, I mean, this fun future where there are giant biomechs running around.
Yeah.
And, you know, an invasion of this, like, unknown enemy. I have a lot of questions, which I like, too. I love that it doesn't just explicitly tell you everything. I feel like if it did, that would kind of, you know, overpower any of the subtlety of the storytelling. If it would just tell you what the deal is with the angels.
Yeah.
What the deal is with, you know, Shinji's dad and stuff. Yeah. It's very subtle. And people kind of act like people in this yeah. show, in a way, to an extent that they don't really act that way in other animes we've seen.
Even in, like, My Hero, which we love, it is kind of, like, very over the top. Like, a lot of these characters are just like, I'm the horny grape man, you right. know? It's not, like, real people. Where it's, like, most of the characters in this do seem like they're these, like, well-fleshed out characters, for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
You're right about the subtlety stuff. Well, first of all, I'll say that I love this show mm-hmm. so far. So mm-hmm. let's get that out of the way. I think this is incredible. Definitely up there with the best animes I've seen. I know it's kind of a short list, but it's growing.
Well, I feel like we've been into most of the animes we've seen. I mean, I was kind of lukewarm on Assassination Classroom.
Yeah.
But it's just so funny that animes eluded you for such a long time because, I mean, with your obsession with Metal Gear and stuff, yeah. It seems like you are someone who is, like, built to be a consumer of anime.
Yeah, I think it was the Paul Reichert genes. You know what? This show deals with genetics and fatherhood and all those things. So let's get mine out of the way there. My dad was very much close-minded about the type of entertainment that you could like and not like and be, like, acceptable or whatever. Not in the way that he was, like, screaming at me, but if I, like, started watching anime, I'm sure he'd been like, what is this weird crap? You know, don't watch this stuff. And so I was always like, okay, I got to just watch the things that, like, would be approved of here. Right. And so I never gave anime a chance, period. Mm-hmm. And I am so glad I'm doing it now. I know I'm coming to the table late with this stuff, but, like, I feel like I'm liking this just as much as I would have if I watched. Well, again, we talked about being an adult with Neon Genesis is helpful, so maybe mm-hmm. this is the right time for me to come to it.
Right.
But you're right. It deals with things with a subtlety that, like, doesn't do a lot of, like, info dumps or anything. Like, there mm-hmm. are little things here. Like, the angels are these monsters that are coming to Earth and terrorizing Earth and destroying cities. And even, like, four episodes in, there was this quick kind of, it almost seemed like a throwaway line of, like, oh, they're actually, like, 99.89%, like, match with human DNA. Mm-hmm. But they didn't really go deep on that, and it plants the seed of that mystery of, like, wait, right. what's going on here? What are these things?
Right.
And, you know, jumping ahead a bit, but we don't find out in these first eight episodes. I don't know if it even comes around to answer that or anything, mm-hmm. but there is this mystery that I really love to this universe.
For real.
So I guess
for real.
You always say that. So to kind of set the stage here of what this world is like, it is set on Earth. It is set in 2015. And it's 15 years after the second impact, which common knowledge is that it was an asteroid that basically melted the South Pole, right? Antarctica?
Something like that.
Yeah, and it just caused, you know, cities were all screwed up and everything. You know, these monsters have started arriving. Like, basically everything as we know it mm-hmm. started getting pretty messed up mm-hmm. after the second impact.
And half of the human race was killed, right?
Yeah, yeah, and, like, species and plants and all this stuff. It's just, like, a huge cataclysmic event. And so it starts out, and we don't know a whole lot of context. We haven't met characters yet, but we see these, like, UN air units trying to defeat this monster. And we don't really know Shinji yet, the main, the kid, 14-year-old. But we see this mysterious lady who seems like a real cool lady right out of the gate, Misato.
Yes.
She kind of pulls up and she's like, hey, it's real, come with me if you want to live type moment. And she grabs Shinji. And then we get another quick glance at another character we haven't met. This guy with sunglasses, kind of framed pretty evil-like. He's watching everything on screen. He's watching these battles and everything unfold. We quickly learn that this is Shinji's dad, Genjo.
Right.
And he's, I would say this early portrayal, it's like, he's clearly important. He seems to be in charge of nerve, is that right? Because there's like nerve, and then there's also like government stuff going on in this.
I think he is at the head of the nerve organization.
Okay. And it definitely seems like, if not outright evil, like there is a certain darkness in the way they portray him.
Yeah. I mean, we learn pretty quickly that for some reason, we don't know why, but we learn that he, for some reason, abandoned Shinji when he was a kid.
It's been like 3 years since he saw Shinji, and he's the one who called for like, hey, I need Shinji, and presumably he sent Misato out. And we see a little bit of the nerve facility here, and it's a very like Black Mesa type of just like this sprawling underground research facility, army stuff going on. It's we don't really know the full extent of what nerve is, but it's obviously like a big important thing. And we meet Ritsuko. Ritsuko is another woman. She's a blonde woman that works there. And so she introduces Shinji to Unit 1 when he arrives. And this is the Eva, or the Ava. Evangelion and Avas. It's confusing.
Summer. We're going to mispronounce a lot of stuff here, so bear with us.
Yes, we will. But Unit 1 is described as like his father's work, and she's like, hey, you need to pilot this thing. And he instantly doesn't want to. Like, do you feel... We haven't seen much of Shinji's past here. Do you think, like... Are they intentionally not showing us a history of, like, military stuff? Or, like, we have no sense that he would be good in this. We don't know why he's the one that's being chosen to get thrown in there.
Well, part of me wonders if these are biomechanical mechs, the EVAs. There's some kind of organic stuff in them. And then when we get the first fight that Shinji's piloting him on, and he has that moment, that true nature moment. I'm jumping ahead a little bit.
Yeah,
it makes me think that maybe the fact that Shinji is the guy at the head of the nerve organization's son, that there's some kind of like special level of synchronization that Unit 1 and Shinji has. In fact, they even say that it takes months to like be able to bond with him or whatever the term they use, and he's able to do it the first time. So I wonder if it's that, something involving his genes, and also the fact that he's a 14-year-old, because this is an anime after all, so the only pilots can be 14 years old.
Everyone's 14. Basically every girl in Soul Calibur. They mention at some point, this is later on, but they do say like they need 14-year-olds. They specifically say 14 to pilot the Avas, which I don't know if they explain why that is. That's a very odd thing, but...
We haven't learned why yet.
It does seem like there is some sort of, like, DNA thing, because, like, when you get in it, like, first of all, he says he's not going to do it. He doesn't want to get in there. And then he basically says he'll do it. And he gets in there, and you get in this cockpit, and this, like, unspecified liquid fills the whole cockpit. And they tell him, like, hey, you got to breathe in, let it in. And so it does seem like it's like his emotions are transferring, and his emotions are transferring to the Ava. It's not like he's back there with a bunch of controls and levers and knobs and stuff. So, yeah, I'm really curious to see what these are. Like, later on, he says that when he gets inside, it smells like blood and that he feels secure inside. And so I'm sitting here trying to think of, like, themes and everything. It's like, is this supposed to be a womb thing? Is this like I'm inside the womb? Or, I mean... I don't know. They haven't really explained like what parts of it are organic.
Interesting, yeah.
You think
it's an interesting way of thinking about it? Yeah, I wonder if there is an element of that, because what other circumstance do we as humans get to breathe in a liquid and not die?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're not fish.
Yeah,
it's weird that fish can do that.
Some might say that we were at some point a fish.
Weren't we? Did we come from tadpole type things in the primordial ooze?
Something like that.
It went from tadpoles to monkeys to us. Is that how evolution works?
I think that's what it...
It's probably completely accurate, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Ava is responding to Shinji, like, even though it's like interface gets disconnected and there's debris falling down because the monster is stomping around up there. And so it just instinctively like protects Shinji, like raises a hand up and protects them. And that's why like all the nerve people are like, holy crap, he's already like, they're not connected to the interface and it's already, you know, connecting. And that seems to be a big deal. They mention a high harmonic value at one point. So still learning how this all works. But they launch him to the street to face the monster. They basically toss him in this thing, and they're like, hey, go fight this thing without any, like, serious training. And
I think that's a little bit of a misstep. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not trying to question that highly secretive UN-backed nerve organization, but I think sending a 14-year-old into a mech with no prior training is a questionable choice.
Yeah, it's like instead of like sending James Bond into a facility, it's like you grab a 14-year-old and you give him an AK and you're like, hey, go do spy shit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know any 14-year-olds, but when I think of someone who's 14, I mean, if I think about myself when I was 14, I certainly wasn't equipped to handle something like that.
Oh, I definitely wasn't either. I could give you a hell of a Monday Nitro recap, but I don't know if I could pilot a death robot. So the next episode starts with him already in there, and this is his first time inside a robot for all we know, so he's trying to walk, and the Ava's, like, falling over, and the monster is this big, crazy, like, this is like a not bipedal, because it's not a robot, it's like a wait, they call humans bipedal, right?
Yeah, where it just means you have two legs.
Okay, right? That doesn't have to be a robot thing. I got Metal Gear on the brain. but so, yes, it is a bipedal, kind of humanoid arms and legs, normal limbs.
Yeah, this one in particular is humanoid. All the angels seem pretty different looking,
which I love. Yeah, because like if they all just look like variations of that, like that's the thing with like My Hero, we talked about how like the Nomu monsters and everything all kind of have that same look. I'm so glad that every time you see an angel, it's like, man, what is this one gonna look like? And right. Some of them are just vastly different than the others. So yeah, this angel, the first one, is just fucking Shinji up. There's this part that I love where he kind of puts his hand on the unit's head, the Ava's head, and this like energy spike is just like repeatedly just railing through the forearm and just like spiking Shinji's skull or the unit.
That's an important point that I don't think we mentioned. Apparently, when the Eva gets attacked, Shinji will feel it.
Yeah.
Although he won't actually have the physical like effects of it, but he will feel the pain.
Yeah.
Which is, I feel like, just as bad, right?
Seems like it'd be really bad, yeah.
If you're feeling your head get torn off, even if your head doesn't actually get torn off, that would really suck.
I'd prefer it didn't happen.
I almost thought of it like when I'm in VR and I'm worried that something's going to happen to me, like if something actually like hurt me in some way, even though I could just take the helmet off, that would still be fucking terrible.
Yeah. It's like the old vest you could buy for the Genesis, and if you're playing Mortal Kombat, it acted like you were getting punched and stuff. But that's what the ads made it look like. But then you put it on, and it's just like it just slightly vibrates in your vest. I don't know why I seriously wanted the thing for Christmas that was like, it's going to be like Sub-Zero's really punching me. But I fucking wanted that thing. Never got it. So Shinji wakes up. Like, he gets fucked up, and we don't really know what happened in the fight. But he wakes up in a room that he doesn't recognize, which I thought this was kind of a cool character moment here, when he wakes up. I can't remember if it was this or a different room, but he's like, oh, another ceiling I don't recognize. Mm-hmm. You know, basically just being like, hey, I'm constantly being, like, moved around. I've never had this, like, sense of home or whatever. Like, here we go again. I don't know where I am.
This moment in particular was, like, one of the first moments watching the show where I was, like, really in awe of how willing it is to not inundate us with, like, music, sound effects, action. Like, it literally, the camera. It's trained on him while he's just laying in the hospital bed for, like, I feel like a good 2 minutes before he even says anything.
There are
several
scenes.
You just
hear
the birds in the background. I really appreciate how it uses silence and stuff, like negative space like that.
Especially with a show that's, like, most episodes are, like, 23 minutes long, minus a couple minutes for the intro and stuff. And, like, it is willing to, like, let these scenes breathe. It's not just, like, go, go, go.
Yeah, I think that's, like, one of the ways in which, like, one of the numerous ways in which the show definitely subverts my expectations for what a mech anime is like, you know?
Yeah, like, and I bet there's a lot of variation within that genre. Like, I'm sure Transformers is totally different. I never watched Transformers, but that seemed like just big dumb robots, you know?
Transformers is actually well known for its introverted scenes, character exploration.
Oh, yeah? Trauma and depression. Yeah. Oh, I guess we got to talk about this, because I think we've talked about it with every anime. Theme song, what do you think?
I really like it.
I like it, too.
Yeah.
It's so kind of at odds with how dark the show is. Mm-hmm. It's this poppy, fun opening. Which, we should say, I had heard that people hate the fact that I guess they changed the end theme. Did you hear about this?
No.
So I guess it used to be Sinatra, Fly Me to the Moon. And for the Netflix one, they changed it. And I saw people on Twitter were very mad about that.
That would have been so cool.
That would have been really cool. Yeah. Instead, it's just this, like, a little piano thing you hear for 3 seconds before Netflix is like, hey, watch the next episode.
Balls.
Yeah. I don't know if they changed the opening theme, but whatever this Netflix version is,
no, they didn't,
good.
Because I was at a work dinner and I was talking to my coworker about it, and she started singing the theme song.
Oh, really?
Like, was an OG watcher.
Oh, so. Excellent. Okay. Yeah. Because, yeah, that theme's pretty sweet. I watched the intro most episodes of this.
So do I.
Yeah. The skip intro button's right there, but I never do it. So we learn, you know, he got fucked up and Masato is going to take him in. So she lives in an apartment and she's like, all right, I'm going to watch the kid. And she seems to be like in her 20s or something. And she kind of shows him around. We learn a bit about the world here. We see this city overlook of Tokyo 3. And it's really cool. It's like, since like these cities are getting attacked all the time mm-hmm. and need to protect themselves, like it all like retracts into the ground, like all the skyscrapers.
Which like I think a is... scared turtle.
Yes, exactly. The city's a scared turtle and there's like an underbelly there. Sometimes you can see, like, it seems like sometimes they're above ground, sometimes they're below ground. All of Nerve seems to be below ground. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she takes him back to her place and it's a mess. It's just like trash and beer cans everywhere. She's slamming beers, making microwave meals.
She's a hard drinking, you know, kind of the only thing she takes seriously is her work with Nerve, which she is extremely competent at. But it seems like the rest of her life is kind of, I don't want to say a mess, but.
Seems like when she's off the clock, she's off the clock.
Yeah, she's just drinking a ton of beer, like barely dressed, walking around, messy apartment.
Hanging out with her fucking penguin.
Yeah, what's up with that guy?
Yeah, that's what we meet the penguin here because she tells Shinji to take a bath. Mm-hmm. And then there's just a fucking penguin there named Penpen that he runs into. That was a moment. We watched this separately because you were on a business trip. And so we watched a lot of these separately. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, oh, man. Okay, I'm into this. Like, there's not a whole lot of like comic relief in this show, but living with a penguin is pretty funny to me.
Yeah, there's no way that could be a serious situation, even if the penguin was the most serious penguin in the world.
Yeah, I don't
like,
think
even if it was like a corporate lawyer penguin. There's no way that's going to be
like Mad Men. It's like he's like a Don Draper penguin cheating on his penguin wife. So we learn that actually I want to see that spinoff show now. Anime seems weird. That might exist.
Yeah.
We learn here that I thought this part was really cool. We learn that in the space that we didn't see between Shinji getting fucked up mm-hmm. in the Ava and him waking up in the hospital, the Ava went berserk and just went fucking nuts on the angel.
Yeah.
And
I guess there's a limited external power source that the Evas have, so they can only operate for, I don't know if they gave us the exact time, but they can't operate indefinitely. There's a limit to how much time they can run. And I guess Unit 1 expended its external resources, but then still kept running. I guess this has something to do with the bond he has with Shinji or something. Because he went into this berserk mode where he fucks the angel up.
Yeah, and I think this is when we're starting to kind of get into maybe what's at the heart of Shinji here. Mm-hmm. Because like, if it is his just motions and his emotions that are like leading to the Ava's actions, mm-hmm. like it speaks to maybe there's a ton of like underlying anger and like violence and stuff right. within Shinji that he's not acting out in his very like shy, normal life. But I mean, he like blacked out and his reaction was like that he fucked up that mm-hmm. angel. So I don't know how deep they're going to go into that stuff, but I think this is some really, really interesting early character development here.
Yeah, I kind of assumed after the first episode and this episode a little bit, I assumed they would go into more of how the science behind the Eva and Shinji and the pilot, how their bond works and stuff like that. Because they were 8 episodes in and they don't really explain that. But I thought that would be a major focus. Like in my mind, it was going to be like, oh, the adventures of this boy and his Eva and how they over time become this like super strongly bonded pair and save the world and stuff. But no, we're getting a lot of crying on the bus. And
there's a lot of crying here.
A lot of birds chirping and just, you know, loss and abandonment and running away and
a lot of sad silence.
A lot of sad silence.
Yes, there's a ton of that. But it all works. Like I think the tone just works so well mm-hmm. in this show. So the third episode starts with like him doing some combat training in the Ava. It's like this big danger room thing. And it keeps repeating this thing. It's like center on target and pull. Trigger. Mm-hmm. And so it showed him just kind of like robotically doing the thing as he was told. And I kind of felt there. I was like, oh, they're going for a theme of like, oh, who's the real robot here? Mm. You know, he's just following orders, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You say you don't pick up on themes.
I think I had to hear that it had themes beforehand to look for them. I think normally my default when I watch a show is just like, all right, I'm going to watch what's happening here.
What you see is what you get. I feel like with everything we watch now, I should be like, now, Dan, tell me if you could pick up on any themes with this one.
Well,
you're just going to be constructing in your mind.
Maybe if you told me before we watched Mother on that airplane, I would have known there were themes about Mother and it wasn't just like, well, this house is crazy.
That's literally when I told him, like, I went to take a pee break while we were watching Mother on a plane, and I was like, are you picking up on this, like, you know, obviously biblical allusions here, and you were, like, gobsmacked by it.
I was like, what? No, it's just a spooky house. I like it. It's just a spooky house. So we do see that, like, you know, Shinji is extremely obedient. He does what he's told without a lot of pushback. Mm-hmm. Like, he's constantly being told to do these things that he doesn't want to do. And he'll kind of be like, I don't want to do it. Like, do it. Okay. Like, so he's pushed around a lot. You get the sense a lot of this is probably from his father. You know, we don't see his upbringing, but his father seems like a pretty serious dude.
Yeah.
And he's lonely. He's got this phone, but no one calls. It seems like he's really isolated mm-hmm. socially. But we do meet, he's in class. I've also learned a lot about, like, Japanese classroom notations, because I feel like between Assassination Classroom, My Hero, and this, they all have that same, like, oh, this is Class 1A or Class 2B or whatever, mm-hmm. which we don't really see over here.
Oh, no, that's how my school was when I was in elementary, middle school. Yeah, I was Class 1A, 1B, 1C,
really?
2A, 2B, yeah.
Oh, we had gold team and black team in junior high.
That is weird.
Which, well, we were that was our colors, and it was like, oh, if you're on gold team, you get the, it's like Raw and SmackDown before the wild card rule. I'm going to stop talking. So... they're in class, and we meet Ida, who's this real Otacon looking kid who's like always filming stuff. He's like the nerdy kid in class. And we also meet Toji. So these are kind of the main two students we meet. And Toji's more kind of like a jock type, and his sister got buried in the rubble of the battle, and so he blames like whoever is piloting the Ava. And all of a sudden Shinji comes in here. And we get kind of a class thing here where they're talking about the meteor in the 90s, hits the South Pole, climate change, all this stuff. And they say that, like, in 15 years, there was a ton of recovery. But then Shinji, like, they all have these laptops in class. Millennials, right? We didn't have laptops. We had a pencil.
Yeah, I had a little flip phone.
Yeah.
T9.
Yeah, they're instant messaging on their laptops. We had to write a note and pass it across three rows.
I remember when I was in college, I would watch Game of Thrones and Dexter episodes on my iPod. Mm-hmm. My, like, Generation 1 iPod.
Oh, the iPod screen. Video.
Yeah. I guess it wasn't Generation 1. But it was like, you know, it had the circular button and then the tiny screen.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even like watching it on your iPhone, which would still suck.
Oh, it was terrible on that tiny screen. I used to bring that to the elliptical and watch episodes like Curb Your Enthusiasm on that. And like video podcasts were trying to be a thing and that never really took off. So they have their school laptops and somebody says like, hey, were you the pilot of the Ava? And he says yes. All the girls seem impressed, and all of a sudden, this dude, it's Toji, just decks him outside. And he's like, I didn't pilot it because I want to, and he decks him again. So we cut to, there's this big old squid thing approaching the city. Tons of sirens going off. So this is the second angel we've seen. And the buildings start retracting. And all of a sudden, it's Shinji going back into the Ava. And he says something here. He says, he's like, man, father's not even watching. Like, why am I even doing this? Which, again, I think we're doing a lot of showing, not telling of what's going on with this relationship. Where he's like, oh, is he only doing this because he's trying to, like, get the approval of his father or something?
Have we seen in these 8 episodes any interaction between those two at all?
I think maybe when he first came to Nerva, although I'm not sure. I can't remember any actual conversation. They made a point of saying that he is staying in an area separate from his father. So, yeah, if we've seen it, it's been almost nothing.
Well, I mean, he's essentially working for the Nerve organization, and he's staying with Misato. Misato becomes his legal guardian.
Yeah.
I think in the episode before this. And it's like, well, his dad is there. Why doesn't he just...
Yeah.
Yeah, there's obviously some issues there.
Yeah, and I'm really curious. Like, we basically watched a third of the episodes, and I really am looking forward to seeing, like, where these things pay off.
Yes.
And I hope they do, you know. But we get another angel fight here, and this one's got, like, these crazy electric whip arms. It's just fucking everything up. It's, like, leveling buildings, and it launches the Ava that Shinji is in into a hillside. And the two kids, Ida and Toji, are kind of, like, trying to watch the fight, and Shinji has to save them from, like, the tentacles of this, this angel monster thing. And Misato tells him to disengage, to, like, hey, stop fighting this thing. Instead, Shinji's Ava just pulls a fucking knife. Like, the robot has, like, a giant robot knife and just charges down the hill. And good thing the angel has a glowing video game boss weak spot there. And so he just stabs him right in that thing, and sparks are flying everywhere. I think this is the one where they, like, froze. It was, like, the last second that he could stay active. And so they're just, like, standing up there with these silhouettes, like, stabbing each other. Just visually, this show has some real moments.
Yeah, it frames everything so awesomely.
And yeah.
I really appreciate that they don't do a ton of music.
No.
I mean, obviously I love music, but I really appreciate when they don't want to force how you should be feeling down your throat.
Not at all.
I feel like using music for that is such a cheap way to do that.
Totally.
In a movie or show or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And then here, like, yeah, more than any music could get across, you get the sense of, like, it just shows Shinji in the cockpit, and he just starts weeping. Like, he won the fight, but he's just, like, God, it's like, seems like it's destroying him, and it's just silent, and he's weeping, and it's, again, one of those moments that's kind of showing, not telling, what the Eva, or the Ava is doing to Shinji. Like, he's not enjoying doing this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and it's, when you think about it, isn't it him that's doing it?
Basically.
So it's like, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's the thing. Like, I wonder if there's also a theme of, like, okay, the Ava is, like, the weapon, like, the same way that, like, okay, if you're piloting a tank or a drone in modern actual war, Like, yeah, maybe you were not the one, like, slitting someone's throat, but if you press the button that drops a bomb on a city or something, like, it's you, you know? Right. So I wonder if that's kind of a theme they're going for. But yeah, it fucks Shinji up, and the next episode starts with we find out that he's skipped school for several days. He like ran away. He's on a train listening to music, like these same two tracks, 26 and 27 on repeat. Which again, we don't learn what that is. Maybe we won't, but obviously it means something to him. But yeah, he doesn't seem to have a destination. He goes to a movie by himself. He has what seems to be like a panic attack outside, and kind of freaks out and starts running. Then he just kind of goes out to nature. He's just walking by lakes and forests and stuff. And eventually winds up meeting up with Ida. I can't remember why Ida was out there.
Ida just happened to be in the field, like, playing with himself. Not.
It's a very adult anime.
You know what I mean.
Yes.
He was just hanging out in the field when they saw each other. It was a coincidence.
Yes.
He wasn't just jerking off in the field.
Hey, you know, you got to find privacy somewhere. Corn stalks are high. I don't know. That's how rural masturbation works, probably.
Imagine some documentary in which they're trying to figure out the secret behind those, like, signs that appear in the
crop fields. Circles.
And it's, like, some British guy with a camera, and they just, like, oh, is that a young Japanese boy jerking off in the field? That would be amazing.
Yes.
Werner Herzog, get on that.
There's a lot of mystery about crop circles, and then we figured it out.
The famous Jerkit Fields in Japan.
Jerkit Fields. There we go.
I obviously thought of that right now. Otherwise, it would have been a little
I don't know. I saw your notepad earlier. You're like, this one's going to kill, Dan. I'm going to say the Jerkit Fields joke.
Bunch of other rejected titles crossed out.
Yeah, you were drawing all the patterns for the crop circles. You've been planning this for weeks, honey. I don't know. Don't lie to
the
people.
That's actually what that work trip was about.
Oh, really? Just had to go seclude yourself and come up with the best joke you've ever had. So Shinji says that he is like Ida, and neither of them have mothers. Mm-hmm. And I realized there that, like, oh yeah, they didn't even really mention mother stuff with Shinji at all. But all the nerve guys, like security and intelligence, show up at the tent that they're staying in, and they're like, hey, you got to come back. And then Masato asks if Shinji will pilot the Eva again. This is a recurring thing for several episodes. Like, hey, pilot the Eva. Right. I don't want to. Come on, do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the thing that gets her to get him to do it is she's like, okay, well, if you don't do it, we got to put Rei in there, which Rei we've only seen briefly before. She was getting kind of wheeled out and she was bloody. At first I thought she might've been like a robot or something, but I don't think she is.
She's the other one that pilots Unit 00.
She was the first children, right? And, Shinji is the third children, which we'll get to the second children stuff later. But yeah, like even early on, it seems like Shinji is kind of interested in what Rei is. And he's like, oh, well, crap. If she has to do it, if I won't do it, I guess I'll do it. But he's not happy about it. And Masato at this point is kind of like, you know what? If you have this much of a problem with it, just quit. Quit Nerve. Don't do this. Which I didn't even really know was an option for him. But he says, yeah, okay, I'll quit.
You know, there's always an option to quit. But I don't think that's ever the right option.
To quit?
Yeah. I don't think quitting
There's a time to walk away from something.
Well, sure. I mean, but I feel like by and large, when it feels like quitting is the easier thing to do, it's probably not the right thing to do.
When it's quitting because something is too hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm always against that for the most part.
Yeah.
You
don't want to quit because things are too hard.
But there is a quitting where it's just like, you know what? This has run its course or this is not helping me in any way. Mm-hmm. You know, there are good things to quit.
Sure.
For sure.
Yeah, you have to know when.
Yes.
But you don't want to quit all the time.
No.
You want to be able to try and fail. I mean, failure is incredibly valuable in life.
Yes, I'm generally anti-quit.
Yeah, you are. You're huge on going for it.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you that too. About you. Thanks.
Yeah. So we learned that there has been like a search for the fourth children, but they have not located it yet. So there's really no like replacement pilots outside of we know Rei, Shinji, and this unknown second children at this point. But yeah, Shinji, at this point, we think he's just about to leave, and Toji apologizes for punching him. He's like, hey, you should punch me, Shinji. And so he does, and these dudes pull him away, and Shinji starts saying, like, I'm a weakling. I deserve to be punched in the face. Mm-hmm. Like, we really are. It's painting a picture of Shinji as a kid. And, like, I was a kid that got bullied all the time, and I was extremely not confident in myself, and I don't think I was ever depressed or anything, but I know what it's like to, like, just be very uncomfortable around other people, especially in like a school setting. And, you know, I relate to some of this for sure.
Right.
Yeah. And Masato even kind of goes into the psychology here by bringing up the hedgehog's dilemma and says that it's like Shinji sometimes mouths off because he has no idea how to relate to others. So he just doesn't know how to like relate like a normal human being to these other kids. And then he goes to the train station to leave. Masato's watching him. And this is another one of those scenes where it's like, hey, this is a long take of him waiting for a train.
Yeah.
And eventually he just says, you know, I'm home. And Masato says, welcome back. So he never actually leaves. And he's like, I guess I need to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
And the next episode starts with a flashback. 22 days earlier, and we learn a little bit about Rei. So she was in Unit Zero.
Right.
That's her, Ava. And as soon as she kind of breaks out of the shackles, I don't remember if this is the activation test or what, but like it breaks out and just starts freaking out. And like the Ava itself is grabbing its own head. And then it starts punching aggressively at the window mm-hmm. with Genjo behind mm-hmm. it, Shinji's dad. And so it's like recognizing him as the creator and like attacking it. And right. obviously there's some sort of breakdown. And they think that Rei is unstable. Like it's like, oh, well, it's doing this because Rei must be unstable.
Okay.
Like Nerve thinks that.
So they're essentially, when they say that, they're suggesting that the Evas aren't autonomous at all. They're always completely being controlled by the pilot.
I mean, it definitely seems that way.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what they're saying, like, oh, the Eva's going berserk because she's unstable. But then it's like, that would also support the thing about, like, Shinji when he gets pushed to his limit and he just goes, like, loses control and starts, you know, really fucking shit up.
Yeah, it's just an extension of the pilot's like brain and behavior,
right?
It seems. Except for there has to be some automated processes, because there is the part where it automatically shielded
There's
Shinji
that,
from the debris.
And then there was that moment, I think in the first episode, where like Unit 01's eyes open up kind of, and I think it's Misato or Rizuku said something about its true nature. And I guess we'll learn in the future what that means, but I'm trying to fit that into what we already know about the Evas.
Yeah, which we don't know at this point, really.
Yeah.
Like, we'll see if it goes into it. But Genjo kind of helps her escape after mm-hmm. this thing kind of all falls apart and everything. And I thought this was really interesting. So he has to go down to, like, her escape pod, and he has to grab it. It seems like it's hot. Like, it scalds his palms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm starting to wonder at this point if there is kind of a, like, this religious analogy here. Like, is he God, and he created these things, and, like, he scalded his palms, you know, like, he burnt his palms trying mm-hmm. to save, like, one of his children, you know? I don't have, like, a firm grasp on what this is, but especially later on, Rei starts talking. Like, Rei is, like, devout about Genjo, and, mm-hmm. like, don't you believe in what he's doing here? Like, he scalded his palms right. to save her and all this stuff. And then also, he did that for her, but there's been no indication so far that he gives a shit about his own actual son.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's a theme. Like, there are also a lot of crosses. Like, the explosions happen in crosses. There's, like, debris standing in the shape of a cross and things like that. So I think it is going for some religious stuff here.
Right.
I don't know exactly what the theme is that they're mm-hmm, going for. Mm-hmm. It's one of those shows I want to read a ton of stuff about, mm-hmm. The subtext and everything, after I'm done with everything.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. So Rei here, we see the kids. I don't know where this is in the timeline, because it was a flashback to begin with, but all the kids are looking at Rei's bazungas, I wrote in quotes, and her thighs. So it does seem like all the boy kids are just constantly horny, except for Shinji, especially
right.
Toji. So they're just kind of perving on her, while as Shinji is just kind of like, seems more interested in like, oh man, she seems kind of like me. You know, she's always alone. She doesn't know how to deal with people either.
Right.
So definitely some like burgeoning, is that a word? Burgeoning?
Yeah,
I think so. Some Shinji senses a connection
right.
with Rei,
mm-hmm.
I feel. And then we go to dinner with Masato and Ritsuko and Shinji. So the two girls that work at NERV and Shinji back at Masato's apartment. And they're about to have ramen. And I got to say, Masato says to add less hot water to the ramen than it says to. Mm-hmm. And I'm really with her on this. I take it a step further. I think, you know, do whatever hot water you got to do. But then before you add the seasoning, I think you drain all of the water. You don't make it like a soup. You drain all the water. So you just got the wet, hot noodles. And then you put the seasoning on that. And it really brings out the flavor of the seasoning. And it makes you taste it more than if it was just part of a broth. You know what
okay.
I mean?
I could see that. I could see
I'm talking like top ramen. Like, you know, I didn't have like real ramen until like I was 30 or something.
Right.
But top
right.
ramen, that's the way I always made it.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. And she put some of the curry stuff that she makes.
Yeah.
Into hers.
Sounds pretty solid.
But apparently it's repulsive curry, because even the penguin, Mr. Pinpin, doesn't want to eat it.
Yeah, he has a bowl and then a beer and passes out. The penguin. Which, I'm kind of into this whole crew here. It's just, you know, these girls and this penguin that are just like chugging beer and eating ramen and stuff. It's like, all right, yeah, they seem pretty cool. I'm into this. But then Shinji's given Rei's new security card.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, give this to her tomorrow. And you can tell that, like, he's fixated at this point. He's like, oh, God, I get to go to Rei's place.
Right.
So he rings the bell. She's not there. And so he kind of steps in, and it's this weird, like, scene from Seven in there, where it's, like, this mobile of socks, and it's, like, a bloody pillow, there's broken glasses on the desk.
It's, like a really mangy-looking building, too.
Yeah.
It's really run down.
Yeah, and a lot of these things are just, like bloody rags everywhere and everything, yeah. So it's, like, I don't know if that's where she recovered from when she got fucked up or what, but, like, not a good scene in there. But she comes out of the shower while he's, like, trying on her glasses for some reason, and she pulls him on top of her. And then they just lay there for a while, and she's like, all right, move, I gotta get dressed.
I thought he, like, slipped and fell on top of her.
I thought she pulled him on top, or this was a very unclear thing. I don't know what they were going for.
I think it was, like, a bunch of really awkward things that happened in quick succession that resulted in him, like, tripping and falling on top of her and her being naked, and, like, him stopping his fall with her boob, like, he's grabbing her boob and shit.
So it's basically the exact same scene as last week's Painting the Stream Miami Connection, in which all the bikini babes had the dude fall on top of them on the beach, and then they get into a slap fight.
Yeah, but instead of rolling around for 5 minutes, he just stands up.
Yeah. Yes. Other than that, identical to Miami Connection. So he gets all gulpy and sweaty and, you know, nervous young boy and says, oh, I was just delivering your card here. And they go to Nerve together. And he asks if she's afraid about piloting Unit Zero again. And this is when she gets all like, she says, don't you have any faith in the work your father is doing? Mm-hmm. And he says no, and she slaps him. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I was starting to think about this, like, religious stuff more.
Right.
Like, she does seem like a devout, like, religious follower.
Right.
She's like, oh, he's doing something great here, you know? Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we find out a fifth angel is inbound. And this is my favorite one. It's just this big-ass blue reflective diamond thing that is just, like, ominously, like, heading towards
Monolith
the city.
Thing.
Yeah, I love the mystery of this thing. It just doesn't look like a standard, like, Godzilla monster or something. And, of course, Shinji is the guy. So it's like, all right, let's send him in again. And right away, the fifth angel is just, like, torching skyscrapers. It torches Shinji's Eva as soon as he goes, like, you know, above the ground there.
Right, yeah. It has this, like, energy beam that just shoots out pretty much as soon as the Eva gets ready to go. It's, like, too
late. Yeah, just torches him. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of the episode. And we find out at the beginning of the next one that it's, like, drilling down into Nerve headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind, at this point, we still don't know what the hell, like, the angel's objective is. It doesn't seem like they're all coming from some, like, same alien planet, because they all look totally different. We don't know if they're aliens. We don't know if they're these creatures made by God or the devil or what the fuck they are. But it is trying to get into Nerve, so there is some sort of intelligence going on here.
Right.
And so Shinji's getting medical attention here because he got fucked up. And they're testing this new angel here. They're taking, like, giant balloon dummies of the Evas,
mm-hmm.
and we're finding out that this diamond thing is just, like, automatically firing upon anything in its range.
Right.
And that's how they learn. I guess they had time to make a giant balloon of the Eva. But Masato's idea is we're going to get a positron rifle, this huge rifle, and we're going to fire at it from outside of range.
And it really does look just like a huge rifle.
Yeah. Like, there's a part where, like, Ray's Eva kind of just, like, reaches in and just grabs it like a big gun.
Yeah.
It's not part of the Eva.
No, it's just a big old gun.
Yeah. And, like, I guess it takes a ton of power because they have to get, like, the Japanese government to agree to shut down all of the major cities.
Yeah, all the electrical output of Japan is used to power this gun.
Yeah, yeah. And some cool shots, like, when they do this of, like, you know, all the grid going off and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, I'm going to put it all into this gun here. And Shinji's in recovery, and he wakes up, and immediately Ray is like, hey, we're launching in 60 minutes. Let's go. And it's like, oh, God damn it. I just got fucked up in this thing, and now I got to go back in. And we find out Shinji is going to be the gunner in his unit, Unit mm-hmm. 1, and Ray is going to be in defense with this, like, giant shield in Unit 0. So midnight hits, they transfer the power and everything, and the first rifle shot misses. It kind of curves around this thing and totally misses, and it has a cooldown period. And so Ray holds the shield while the cooldown's happening, and it's, like, melting away as the angel's beam is attacking it. And then they hit with the second rifle shot. So it pierces through the angel. It crashes. And then Ray's Ava collapses too, because it's been like taking the brunt of this thing the whole time. And Shinji goes and like opens up her capsule. He's terrified she's dead. She's alive. And so he starts crying. He's like, oh, my God, I'm so glad you're okay. And she just doesn't know how to respond at all. Mm-hmm. And he's like, just smile. And she smiles.
All right.
So some sort of connection starting to happen here between those two.
Yeah. I mean, that's it's a weird time to ask someone to smile. I mean.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I don't know. What would you do in that situation?
Just probably just get them to safety. And yeah, like, hey, probably, okay?
I wouldn't take time to tell them to smile.
Yes, yes. She does say, like, I don't know how to respond, though. Yeah. So I was like, eh, let's get out of here first, and then we'll talk about smiling. So we start the next episode with Shinji and the penguin just eating breakfast, as you do.
Yep.
Does this show make you want a penguin?
Oh, yeah. I've always wanted a penguin. That's always been a desire for me, a dream, a longstanding dream that I would one day own, specifically a puffin.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like whenever we watch Planet Earth or one of those shows and we see penguins, you do have a particular affinity.
I squeal. Yeah. I do squeal.
Yeah.
When we were at the Bronx Zoo, Dan and I saw these penguins. And there's this penguin. It's a type of penguin that is called Little Penguin. That's its name.
That's
Can
the
you
medical
imagine
name.
How cute that must be? It was so cute. They were literally little tiny penguins.
Yeah. I don't know what it would, like, I don't hear about a lot of people holding penguins as pets, so there must be some,
I'm kind of against people having exotic animals as pets.
Yeah.
But, I wouldn't be against, at some point, meeting a penguin and possibly petting it on its head.
That would be great. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. There was definitely a long period of my life in which I was dead set on having a monkey as a pet. And then I saw Project...
You would not be a
good monkey owner. No. And then I saw that documentary Project Nim about basically trying to, like, domesticate a monkey and didn't go great. They tried to raise him as, like, a human child and things did not go great for anybody.
Poor Nim.
Yeah. So let's... So even when we get our house, we're not going to get a penguin?
I don't know. I don't... I'm always going to think about it, but it's not something I'll ever do now.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, Masato wakes up and just immediately starts chugging beer in the morning. And then the schoolmates show up, Ida and Toji, and they're instantly perving out about Masato. Just, you know, that's constant with most female characters in the show, it seems.
Right.
And then they're watching from inside class, and Masato pulls up to school and does, like, the super sweet parallel parking job from Nutty Professor. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when he's got the sports car?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, he does sports that exact same thing. Which I think this show might have came out the same year as The Nutty Professor. It was a great year for cool parallel parking shots in media. But this is when Shinji's thinking about the Evas, and he's like, I don't even know what they are. And it's like he mentions they're like smelling blood inside, but feeling secure and everything. So again, not sure if that's like a whole theme that I don't fully grasp, but it seems like it might be some sort of in the womb thing. But then, yeah, we learn about the true nature of the second impact. Ritsuko says that it wasn't a meteor, it was an angel that they found in the Antarctic 15 years ago. And there was this explosion, and they're just trying to prevent a third impact, and that's why the Evas exist, is to just stop this from happening again, because that wreaked so much havoc.
But why do they look so cool?
The
she
Evas?
She doesn't answer that. Why do they have to look so cool?
I would think that a lot of that stuff is for function. But, yeah, some of that stuff just seems like it's just some real badass stuff. Like,
yeah.
I think in one of the soon episodes we're going to talk about, when it has, like, a cloak, it, like, jumps on top of a boat, and it's got this sweet, like, Ninja Gaiden cloak. It's pretty badass. And they all look different and super sweet.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what all the rest of them look like. I mean, I hope there are more than just these three that we've
got. It, oh, man, I went from saying I hated anime to now we have, like, several Vegeta things in our living room on display. And now I'm thinking, like, I bet they make really cool models of those Evas. Like, oh, man, it'd be pretty fucking cool. We got, like, an All Might figure on our... Yeah, we're going down the rabbit hole here. And then a different morning, this is right after Masato was just, like, chugging beer and stuff. She's, like, all dressed up and serious. Mm-hmm. And Shinji and the penguin seem confused. And she's going to this, like, big military consortium thing. In old Tokyo, which I assume that was like the original Tokyo that got destroyed or something. Yeah. And it's kind of unclear. It seems like these might be like Ava manufacturers that are up there on stage, this consortium. And Ritsuko is asking questions about them. And the manufacturer is, I think he's trying to say that like they want to make unmanned Avas was what I took away from this.
Yeah. From what I understand, it's like a rival organization that also builds mech soldiers to combat the angels. But their whole shtick is instead of an external like battery power source, they have a nuclear reactor that powers them.
Yeah, and he was saying, like, the manufacturer is saying, like, oh, this is more humane, you know, there's no human pilots, and it keeps things like berserk Avas from happening due to emotions or whatever. But then I think Ritsuko is saying, like, yeah, but if we're getting into close-range combat in cities and stuff, and there's a nuclear reactor in there, that's a huge risk as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You're probably putting more people at risk with the nuclear stuff.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Nuclear? Am I saying that right?
Nuclear.
Nuclear.
Nuclear, yeah. I remember Homer Simpson and George W. Bush say nuclear. So they're doing like an activation test, which I think kind of doubles as a like, hey, here's our new product. Mm-hmm. And they're like, watch this unmanned Ava. And it just keeps walking and they can't shut it down at all. And Masato is like, okay, I got to figure out how to stop this thing. So she grabs Shinji, gets Shinji in Unit 1. And they're like sprinting at this rogue unmanned Ava. And so Shinji kind of puts Masato on top of it. She goes in there to deactivate it, but the password she was given doesn't work. So it's about to blow up, but she, at the very last moment, stops it from exploding. Mm-hmm. So disastrous first test or demonstration of this
thing. She's in there, though, I guess the way things were put together, she realizes that it had been sabotaged to go to like start melting down.
I realized that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, was she... Okay, so what's the theory on that, you think? Do you think it's...
Ritsuko and Gendo, the Shinji's dad.
Yeah.
Like, don't they just admit to being the ones that sabotage?
Oh, so it was them trying to, like, do, like, counter-ops on this rival company or something? Okay. I mean, that would make sense,
yeah.
I guess. And we cut to another morning, and Masato's back to normal, just chugging beer. And the classmates kind of say that, like, well, Shinji, you see her as she really is. Because he's, complaining about her being a slob and drinking and all this stuff. And the classmates are like, no, that's just who she is when she's not trying to put an image out for other people. Like, that's what families do. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you're seeing the real Masato, basically. And Shinji just, like, I guess just doesn't know how humans are, you know?
Right.
It seems like he's just had a very isolated life growing up and is just now kind of learning how people work.
Yeah, interesting. That's very, you know, astute observation from those kids.
Yeah, definitely. There's some smart kids there.
We're just in love with the image of her, not who she really is.
Yeah, that's a pretty deep thought for some 14-year-olds. So the last episode we're talking about here starts with kind of Masato and Shinji and the classmates are on this helicopter thing over the Pacific Ocean. And they're landing on an aircraft carrier to meet the second children, Asuka.
Mm-hmm.
Asuka is the pilot of Unit 2, which is from Germany. And, oh man, Unit 2 looks real badass.
Yeah.
I like the look. I think this is my favorite one.
It's cool looking, Eva.
It's real cool. It's all red. Looks sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So Toji immediately gets horny when he meets Asuka because she is a female. And he just pulls his dick out. Just hey, what's up? Pulls the dick out and gets slapped. So that's the first impression with them.
I think that's a good reaction.
Yeah, a punch, a slap, getting the fuck out of there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in some circumstances, that might warrant calling the police.
Oh, yes. If they were not on a boat in the middle of the Pacific, she should call the cops. But she's surrounded by, like, military things and giant crazy robots.
Maritime law, anything goes.
Yeah. That Toji guy. Just, come on, settle down, bud. And we meet a new guy here, Kaji. And Kaji is escorting Asuka. And they kind of eat with the kids and stuff. And we it's implied that Kaji used to be with Masato.
Right.
He makes some joke about what she's like when she's asleep or something. Mm-hmm. All the kids are like, oh, God, they've had sex. And we learned that Units 1 and 0 were prototypes. And Unit 2 was the first, the quote was like, it's the first real Evangelion built for combat operations. That's what Asuka says.
Mm-hmm.
She seems a little bit cocky,
yes.
I think. And she's like, hey, like, I've got the real Ava here. And like... She doesn't seem...
She does. Even, like, towards the end of the episode, the kids who were obsessed with her, Shinji's classmates, were both talking about, like, she's a little much, though.
Yeah. Seems to... Yeah, her shit doesn't stink to her, you know? But an angel, sure enough, this is a recurring theme in the show, is like, then an angel shows up and starts fucking things up. So it's like blowing up the fleet, and Asuka's all about, like, oh, I'm going to prove myself here and show how sweet I am. And I really liked this little scene here where she's getting suited up in the stairwell. And the suit does this cool, like, vacuum seal thing where it, like, looks puffy at first and it's like, it conforms to the skin. I thought that just looked awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes into Unit 2 with Shinji.
Right.
So it's like both of them go in there. Did you catch, like, why that was?
I don't know if she wanted to prove her capabilities explicitly to him or if it's because they weren't getting along and she wanted them to do it together or something.
Oh, okay.
I'm not really sure why he was in there. I'm not completely sure.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was really a possibility until this moment. Although we did see the other kids, the classmates were in before he stabbed the one with a knife.
Right.
So Unit 2 Sweet, that's the one that like jumps out of the water and does a fucking cool cloak pose on top of a boat. Just looks sweet. It's like hopping across the boats, pulls out a big ass knife. Again, I hope the show keeps having giant robots pull out giant knives. That's hilarious and amazing to me. And this angel is like a big, gross, like, manta ray type thing.
Right.
Lots of tentacle, weird water squid stuff going on. And it knocks Unit 2 underwater. And in the middle of all this, we see Kaji kind of takes off in a fighter jet. Mm-hmm. We don't really know what's going on with him.
I wonder if, from my understanding, like, he was talking to Shinji's dad. And I almost wonder if, like, they knew this angel was coming and that it was a helpless situation or something. And he was just saving his own ass.
Yeah. And we get a little tease at the end of the episode. But I don't know if the tease is actually tied to why he was on the fleet at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure we'll find out in the next set. But the angel gets Unit 2 in its jaws, but Unit 2 is like attached to the ship. It's like a big fishing thing almost with the unit as the bait. And Masato's idea is, well, we're just going to reel it in like a fishing pole until both of our biggest battleships are in the angel's mouth, basically. And then we're going to shoot at point blank range. And it works. It's kind of this cool looking scene where the boats like are just lodged in the thing's mouth and just like huge explosion. And then in the aftermath, Ritsuko says that, I think she's talking about Shinji and Asuka, and says that they set a new record for synchronization. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if that meant that, like, oh, we put these two people in there and they somehow bonded quicker with the unit, or if the addition of Shinji, like, if Shinji had a harmonic value with Unit 2 or something. Yeah, did you pull anything from this?
I'm not sure. I'm really curious about that, though. I hope they explain it further, because the synchronization stuff is of great interest to me.
That's, like, kind of the core mystery I'm curious about with this show, is, like, just the nature of the Evas and the how humans interact with it. Like, that... I mean, it seems like they want us to think that's, like, the big thing. That's,
sure.
They kind of come out of the gate in these episodes with this. But then, yeah, the teaser at the end here is Kaji meets with Genjo and says, like, he's delivering the first human being, which he calls Adam, which is, like, this little organism in this, like, little block of Jell-O type thing. And I had no sense of what this was or where he got it. I didn't know if that was from the fleet. I don't know if that was from the angel. I don't know if we're supposed to know.
I don't know if he stole it from the UN fleet or something. We don't really know anything about that yet.
No, and
it would all just be assumptions.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of an interesting thing to leave off on as we head into this next set of episodes, which, hey, I guess we'll announce now. Next week, we're going to cover more episodes of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
It would be so cruel to watch 8 episodes of this show and then not continue.
I know, but the good thing is now that we've recorded this, the second we stop recording, we can start talking about it or watching it again. And then at the very end, we find out Asuka is in class with everyone now. So that's the last thing we saw in these 8 episodes. And yeah, I think we're in total agreement about the show just being like, I'm immediately into this.
Yeah, it's awesome. The tone, it's so dark. It's kind of brooding and very mysterious as well, and apocalyptic. It's,
yeah,
you know, futuristic. It's everything I want in a show.
Oh, and I know you're huge on, like, you know, cool, like, future stuff like Blade Runner, where I think Blade Runner does this really well too, where everything, like, all the interfaces and the UIs for, like, the computers and everything, it all just has this cool style to it, you know? And every time they show an interface in this show, which is a lot, it just has this sweet style that doesn't look like it's just cribbing from, like, computer interfaces of the day. It is, like, this cool futuristic, I guess style is the word I keep coming back to
this
here.
This is a very unique show. I can see why it's been so celebrated over these years. It's very, very unique.
Yeah. And as we go forward, I'm most curious about the themes. It seems like they're hinting at, you know, fatherhood, some religious stuff, you know, turning kids into soldiers, you know, emotional trauma, you know, like, serious shit.
And, like, sex stuff, too.
Some sex stuff. Yeah, like, I can definitely see there's some, like, Metal Gear type stuff going on here, for sure, and I'm extremely excited about it, especially knowing that it's these 26 episodes.
I was gonna say, that makes it so much less intimidating too, because so many times it's like you hear about this really good show, especially with anime, and it's like, okay, but there's 900 episodes of it.
Yeah, case closed. Yeah. I also love that about My Hero, is that, like, I love that we haven't started season 3 yet, and everyone says, like, that's the best one from what I've seen, and they're about to start a season 4, so we have this ongoing one that we're watching, we have this, like, classic one that is now available to people thanks to Netflix. It's turns out anime is pretty fucking good.
It's pretty good. They know what they're doing over there.
They do. So that'll be it for this week. Next week, we are going to watch episodes 9 through 17 of Neon Genesis. We normally don't announce ahead of time, but we know for sure we're going to do the full run of Neon Genesis. So that'll be the next couple weeks here. So episodes 9 through 17 on Netflix, if you want to watch with us for next week. But we're going to thank everyone, as we always do, everyone that's listening, and especially our supporters. If you're listening for the first time this week, which this is a big anime, so odds are pretty good. If you go to pantingthestream.com, we do our podcast through Anchor, and they have a listener support feature. So if you click support this podcast, you can help us out at $1, $5, or $10 a month. Or you can do it, you know, once and then cancel. It's super duper easy.
Dan, you guys don't know this, but Dan gesticulates so much with his hands when he's talking.
My mom does that too. I think I get that from her. So, yes. So to everyone who is helping us currently or has in the past or will in the future, thank you so much for keeping the lights on at this podcast and showing you support and appreciate the podcast each and every week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And each week, we always promise if we have a new supporter that they will get a custom Bonku.
A Bonku for you.
From Bianca. So that is a haiku from Bonk, Bianca.
We call it a Bonku.
We call it a Bonku. That's our word. We trademarked it.
Yeah.
Let's hear it. Do we have one? Do we have a new supporter? We do.
This week's supporter is Emily, who is kind enough to go out of her way, take time out of her special day, which I don't know anything about Emily, but I'm going to assume that all her days are a little special. She took time out of her day to support our podcast, Dan, and I think that's worthy of a Bonku.
Absolutely.
All right. The bird and rabbit exchanged tales of Emily. She is their hero.
I like that one a lot.
I just had this idea of Emily being like a woodland princess who all the animals are really good.
Raises her hand and a bird lands on it.
Exactly.
And
really,
or Ace Ventura.
Just so she knows. That's what I think about when I think about her. So.
Well, thank you, Emily. And thanks, Bonk, for that wonderful Bonku. Thanks to all of our supporters and listeners.
Thank you, supporters and listeners.
If you have any feedback for us, you can email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com. We know, with anime, it opens up the floodgates of corrections and clarifications and things. We'll read
them
all.
Don't ruin this for us. Just let us enjoy it.
Yes. I definitely learned with Dragon Ball. It's like, oh boy, anime fans love their anime and they want to tell you. Oh, they love that. Yeah. But yes, you can email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com. You can follow us at PanTheStream on Twitter. And, you know, let us know your suggestions and recommendations, all that stuff, anywhere works for you. And I guess, do we have any suggestions for the folks as we head out this one?
I do. And
what do you
I'll
have?
Try to keep this brief. But all my life, I've heard about this debate over cake donuts versus. Yeast donuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew the difference, right? I've always heard that one is superior to the other. People seem to have strong opinions about it. I didn't learn the difference until this weekend where I had the opportunity to have a cake donut and then I would say the next day I had a yeast donut. And I could tell you, for anyone who's wondering, who's sat there listening to this cake versus yeast donut their whole life, I can finally explain to you what the difference is. The yeast donut ones are the ones that are really like light and fluffy.
Like a normal glazed donut?
Well, there's also cake glazed donuts, so you can't really
say
normal.
Confusing. Okay.
The cake ones are more dense and like cakey.
Okay.
But, you know, the yeast ones have like the pockets of air and stuff. And I am someone who, if I'm eating some kind of treat, I need to be able to dip it in my coffee. I just need that. It's in my life. I just can't do it if I'm not being able to dip it in coffee. And the yeast donut is dippable, but the cake donut really takes the cake when we talk about dipping things in coffee. So
okay.
I'm going to suggest this week that everyone goes out and gets a cake donut, whatever flavor you like. I'm an old-fashioned kind of gal, but whatever you like, go for it. Treat yourself because you're great and you deserve a little cakey coffee deliciousness.
You love your coffee, so I see why the ability to dunk in coffee would push something over the edge for you to be your favorite.
Oh, yes.
Great. That's a good suggestion.
Thank you, Dan.
I would suggest, and this might sound like an ad, which, again, suggestions are never ads.
Never ads.
It'll be obvious when it's an
never
ad.
Never ads.
So I'm from Kansas City, and Joe's Kansas City Barbecue used to be known as Oklahoma Joe's. Now it's Joe's KC.
Mm-hmm.
I miss it dearly because it was my favorite place to eat ever.
It is delicious.
It is extremely good. You've been to one of the locations in Kansas City.
I think we went twice to...
We've gone to the one in Olathe a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And I miss it so much no matter what city I happen to be living in at the time. Thankfully, they actually do send stuff out in dry ice and stuff. It's a little pricey, obviously, because you got to like get it shipped out and everything.
Right.
But my father, it seems for the last several birthdays and Christmases, has defaulted to sending me a giant gift card to Joe's KC every year, every 6 months, which is real great.
Yeah.
And I just got a giant shipment of it in. And it turns out it reheats extremely well. They send out bottles of their incredible barbecue sauce.
It's super easy to prepare. They ship it to you frozen, and then you just boil a big thing of water. The stuff's already cooked. So you essentially are just reheating it. And you just put the bag. It's like this heat-resistant bag that the stuff is in. You just put it in there for like 20 minutes. And then it seems seems pretty. I rarely have it here, but it seems pretty good, right?
It's perfect. It's great. Yeah, it's. I miss the fries because the fries are among my favorites ever at the actual restaurant. Mm-hmm. But the meat is the real star. I would. It's all good. Can't go wrong. But if you want to get one and you haven't tried it, get a few pounds of burnt ends. They are just the most
tender. They're very fatty.
They're fatty, tender, saucy. Just if you want to know, Casey
barbecue.
I think
I'm a beef brisket girl.
The brisket's great too. Also, Q39 in Kansas City is great, but I don't know if they ship out. So I guess my suggestion to you folks that don't live in Kansas City or within spitting distance, order from, I think it's joeskc.com. Again, that sounds like an ad. It's not. I just really love Kansas City barbecue.
Can you imagine if we had Casey Joe's?
Joe's Kansas City? Hey, if Joe's listening to our anime podcast, sure, yeah. Talk to us. We'll do an ad. But yeah, that's my suggestion. That's it for this week. I'm excited about next week.
So am I.
I'm excited we can jump back in to Ava, as the kids call it, because the show is excellent, and I really can't wait to see where it keeps going.
Yeah, same. Very excited. Thank you, everyone who's been talking about it and getting it on our radar.
Yep, it is firmly on our radar, and we've got two more weeks of watching and talking about it. So
potentially more than that if we do the movie.
I have heard there are movies, so yeah, we'll cross that bridge. But we got at least two more weeks for sure. Thanks to everyone listening and supporting. Thanks to you, Bonk.
Thank you, Dan.
And we'll see you all next
Great
week.
Host. Best host in the world.